Hello and aloha, everyone. Thank you for joining the Moana Nui podcast. We're so excited to have you with us. As for those that are joining for the first time, this is our special Wednesday segment that we do every month with Kumu Michelle Manu, who is talking about the indigenous legal aspects that we need to know as we're navigating our daily lives and prepare for the things that we're not expecting, ranging from the loss of a loved one to other aspects. And of course, tonight we're going to be diving into part two to the real estate planning that we had a part one last month. So if you haven't watched that one, you can go to our YouTube page where you can definitely tune in and watch that particular episode to kind of see what all we talked about. But we're going to cover a few things and kind of highlight a few aspects. But those that are meeting Queen Michelle Manu for the first time, I want to tell you a little bit about this magnificent person that is to my right. She is internationally known for accomplishments as a 10th degree black belt. She's also a Kumu Lua, which is a teacher of indigenous Hawaiian cultural practice and martial, that is the Lua. She is currently the only high-ranking female teacher of this art and currently the only public representative of Hawaiian women warriors in over 200 years. She's presently the only woman to be given the designation of Knight Commander. But on top of that, she has a past of being a professional Polynesian hula dancer and choreographer for 10 years, but this amazing woman, not only understanding the legal world, she and being in a legal profession for 26 years. So basically she started this at the age of 5. She also teaches self-protection to people in high-risk environments, such as pilots and flight attendants, real estate professionals, healthcare professionals, and many more. So I would like to welcome Kumu Michelle Manu to the show again as we dive in to talk about estate planning for our second segment to dive into that.
Thank you so much, Dana. So it's nice to be back. And these are important topics. Yes. My qualifications, it's 28 years actually this May in law. And it's ever developing, and law tends to be behind the curve of our lives, technology, and business. So it's hard for us to keep up. But one thing that has been consistent is estate planning. Estate planning is when we strategically and legally leave instructions that provide financial security for our loved ones after we leave our physical form. And now in Maoli times, if we're speaking from the Hawaiian sense, this wasn't necessary. All of the issues stem from our aina still to this day. Mm-hmm. And of course, land and property is going to be an issue in a future segment here that we'll be doing in a monthly is property, but it's going to be intellectual property. So it's not going to be tangible. Mm-hmm. It's going to be more like name, image, likeness, and the digital world that is coming to us now. You may own your own physical likeness, but if someone films you, do they own it then? So we've got all of this that's happening in the property sense of law, but today we're speaking about what you have accumulated during your lifetime, what you have worked so hard to accumulate to leave to the next generation or spouse. Or loved ones. This is what we're talking about today. So if we leave proper documentation of our wishes, then we also name someone or some persons that would be able to act as if they were you and to make sure that the property and funds that you leave are from down to a toaster or a collector's spoon all the way to a larger financial account that you are leaving for your family members, that's distributed properly. So it also helps to avoid or minimize, discourage any disputes between family members and, of course, non-family members. And of course, we run into this in our Maoli culture and current Hawaiian culture. We like to differentiate in times, generations of what was ancient and what is now Hawaiian, what we consider, which has been highly influenced, the term of Hanai and what means. And does that hold up in court? Not on the continent, it wouldn't. But what about back home? What about on islands? What has been some of the precedent through the courts that has upheld a clear adoption of an individual, whether minor or not minor, and their relationship with the family? So this would also help to avoid disputes or even a bona fide koko relative saying, no, you're Hanai. You don't deserve any of this, even though something is in the trust or the will that sets out that the Hanai son or daughter is supposed to get something. If done properly, if we can set forth this paperwork, which is a one and done deal unless we amend it, then we can avoid paying also unnecessary taxes, avoid a probate court, and provide for protections of our assets and beneficiaries, right? If you were here, who would you give what and to who? And we want to make sure it's in your own power to take accountability of this mana that you have and the vision that you have to put it into writing, right? Because things change after we've had. People turn into crazies and they want what they want. And something happens to families when a loved one dies and there are assets that need to be distributed. That's essentially what estate planning is and some of the challenges and also some of the rewards of putting together the proper paperwork. So last month, we spoke of the power of attorney for medical and also the power of attorney for financial. So I hope all of you that are here that listened last month are into the way of preparing your powers of attorney, or maybe even you executed them since we spoke last, since I put such an emphasis on this. So hopefully everyone has done that. If you haven't, I'm going to review quickly what a medical power of attorney is and maybe take some questions from you, Dana, and then also then go into financial power of attorney, and we can get into the rest of the documents and what this means. This takes some work, and it's like self-defense in a different way, right?
Yes.
Lua, making sure at the time of make or death that you're prepared and you have your pig fences up, right? We want to make sure that we have medical power of attorney is not involved, just like the financial power attorney is not involved. You just need to make sure that you designate who will be making decisions on your behalf if you are deemed and declared incapacitated, which means that you're in a coma or you're not in this right state of mind, you're on heavy medication, and you're unable to make daily life decisions. And this also means, under the financial power of attorney, caring for your place for as long as you're in the hospital or in care. Full legal name, telephone address of your primary designated agent that will act on your behalf. I always like to put in there a secondary agent if the primary is unable to serve. Things happen. Say you and I, Dana, are in a car and we decide to have a girls' weekend or we're going to a cultural event and we're driving from the hotel to the event and I'm listed as your primary designated agent and we're both now in a coma. And I can't act as your primary designated agent. Whoever's listed as the secondary would take over for you. Also, in this medical power of attorney, you get to discuss anatomical gifts. Would you or are you even able biologically to give and donate some of your organs? That's quite important. I know it's on some of our driver's licenses, but things change. You know, we get diagnoses and that changes our ability to actually gift some of our organs and pain and life support. How much pain do we want to stay comfortable while we recover, to provide less wear and tear and stress on the body while it's trying to heal itself? And do you want opioid or non-opioid? And when that, will you, if you're placed on a certain type of medication, will you become addicted to it, which means that it will alter your endorphins, and coming off of that when you are healing will be very excruciating. So thinking about that, as well as how many times do you wish to be resuscitated if you flatline, and how long do you wish to stay on life support? It's also lastly talks about if there is a dire diagnosis that is given to your left, the primary and secondary agents of yours, and say that you only have so much time to live, or if we remove the machine that is assisting Michelle in living, but how long do we want to allow that machine? How long does Michelle really want to be on this life support if we really feel that she's not going to improve? And is there, will that be sufficient if one doctor says that, or would you like your primary and secondary agents to go and seek a second or third medical opinion? So this is what's covered under the medical power of attorney. You can see why it's really important, because we could get into a very serious car accident and not have this in place. Mm-hmm. Nobody really knows what your desires are if that was to happen today. And you can always void that and enter into a new one as your circumstances change, or say your primary designated agent no longer wants to serve, then you'll draft a new medical power of attorney so that it's updated and given to your doctors. Yeah. So any questions on that one, Dana?
I think I know a lot of questions with especially medical power of attorney. A lot of hospitals ask you that when you come in for appointments. Do you have they don't call it medical power of attorney. They call it
a medical directive.
Directive, yes. A medical directive. How different is the medical directive versus the medical power of attorney?
They're synonymous, just like you have the directive for healthcare or healthcare directive. Each state calls it something a little bit different, but they're all synonymous. They're all the same.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And as you were talking about with being resuscitated in different, if you use opioids or not, how deep can that power of attorney go as far as giving your will, as far as blood transfusions, all that kind of different things? How deep can it really go for you to kind of give your voice that you don't have something that isn't covered, and they're like, hey, we have to do a transfusion or have to replace this organ? Would your will really be considered if you don't have it, everything outlined in it?
No, of course it'd be considered. I mean, this is a good conversation to have with your primary and secondary agents that will act on your behalf. I think the goal is obviously to get you better and out and not incapacitated, to make you whole of sound mind and body, so you can return to your apartment, your home, your job, and your life. And so I think if the doctors said we need to do a blood transfusion, we're not sure if that's going to help. But of course, the agents would say, yes, of course, do it. She would say, yeah, do it. What's going to happen if I don't have it? So
yes.
I think the common thread is that everything is to heal you and get you back into a whole position. Yeah.
Okay. And with the financial power of attorney, that is another area that a lot of people haven't really considered as far as having that kind of coverage, because we know, like I know for the state of Georgia, the hospitals ask every time you come in, do you have a medical directive? If you do, please provide us a copy to have on file. So we have a copy to know, okay, this person has your best will in, or they're the person who's going to be speaking on your behalf in case anything happens. But you don't hear as much on the financial power of attorney to be able to handle the financial side of your life. Is that just paying bills, or is that someone who decides what gets taken care of financially, or is that goes into your different assets that you have and things like that? What does that financial power of attorney have the power over when you're incapacitated or in a coma or something like that?
That's a great question. So there are segments throughout the financial power of attorney where you can give different people, agents, different rights to handle certain things for you. What I see mostly is one person with a secondary, so a primary and a secondary. I've also prepared where there's co-agents that will act on your behalf. So they're both kind of checking each other.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes this is really important because it can be to access your bank account to pay your medical bills, to access your bank account to pay your car payment, your apartment, your mortgage, to prepare to work with your CPA or accountant to prepare your taxes. I'm sure the IRS will give you a pass if you're in the hospital, but they don't really waive the fees and the fines for late filing. So your agents can then liquidate anything on there if you check a specific box, including selling your home to pay for your care. So let's just say that something unfortunate happens. You've gotten better. You have been discharged from the hospital, but now you're in an assisted living situation, and you will probably not be able to go home for 6 months or possibly ever. At that point, your agents would then act on your behalf, sell your home, and use those funds to pay for your assisted living, lodging, and care. They can sell anything. They can liquidate any financial account, stocks, bonds, 401ks, Roth IRAs, anything like that to care for you while you're alive. Yeah. It may not be the standard, but at least you have something that can be liquidated and then pay for your care.
Okay. And would they be able to also deal with insurance also, as far as whether it's medical insurance or even life insurance policies? Or a lot of people have those supplemental policies that if you get hospitalized, it covers X amount for you. Would they be able to handle those on your behalf also?
Yes. Yes. And just this financial power of attorney, because you're alive, and that's what, obviously it's for when you're alive, but can't make decisions for yourself. So yeah. I mean, they can't enter into any new policies, but they can like insurance coverage, but they can access what you already have in place. And that long-term care, we really need to think about that. There aren't generations taking care of generations anymore. And then we spoke about last month, funeral insurance. Oh, so amazing. So these are available to us now, and those would be supplemental that your agents could access for your care and funeral.
Exactly. So that's very good to know, especially for those that you haven't really considered it, or you. The one thing I constantly hear is, I don't want to think about that right now. It freaks me out. It makes me very sad to think about this for my parents, for my sibling, for my loved one. But what advice would you give for those that think that, of go ahead and overcoming those feelings to make sure these things are in order?
Oh, it's so hard, Dana, because if you think of boomers, they weren't encouraged to talk about these things. They weren't encouraged to seek therapy. They weren't encouraged to feel anything other than just grind and go to work, and everyone has their role. While things were a lot simpler, as people would say, they also were just avoiding having difficult conversations. And actually self-accountability as well, right? This is how I am. This is how you deal with it. Unfortunately, because I'm Gen X, the line, and if my parents were still alive, they probably wouldn't want to talk about it. So it's not so much like us as the kids that don't want to talk about. We know it's going to be met with resistance. Actually, it would probably be met with, and this is not my expertise, but I mean, from what I see in life, probably met with, why? You want my stuff? Why? What's so important about this? What are you up to? You want me to die? So we're stuck in that place as Gen X, or having older parents that were from, even Gen X probably doesn't want to talk about it either. So I feel bad for kids today. But, you know, it's about us and setting our life straight and waking up to what's important and showing, this is an act of love, showing our aloha through preparation for our love.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you really want to have a hard time deal with the government? Do you want them to have a hard time with dealing with others that come forward and say, you know what? No, that's mine. Or someone else has access and they clear out a whole space and those are your heirlooms and something that you wanted. You've been wanting since you were a young child. So I think these conversations need to happen. And this paperwork may be painful initially, gathering all this information, but it is our responsibility. It would be our kuleana to do this for our ohana. And it's ultimate. Yeah. A huge display of aloha. And on that, they say that the family is the ultimate depiction of survival. If you do not get this in place, that means nothing. You're not helping your next generation to survive. You want to give them an advantage, right?
So yes.
These are hard conversations to happen, but we're not going to be here forever.
Exactly.
Why did you work so hard to leave nothing to no one?
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, with the case of the living will, a lot of times people think of the assets, the insurance policies, but a lot of times people don't quite think about our furry family members and how we need to make sure they are represented, what we want is represented for those furry ones. Because I've seen so many cases that those wills, there wasn't a will, and those, I've seen it online and these posts of these people abandon these animals. They take them to drop them off at a shelter because they're just like, this, you know, my loved one passed and we have to take care of this. But like, how would someone make sure their furry family members, or maybe scaly family members, or furry family members, are properly taken care of, how they want them to be taken care of by someone they know will take care of them? And also, what outline what you want that to be, how it'll be done.
It's just a separate section within the will and also the trust. And then you would just set out who would be their new custodian to live out the rest of the years of their life. And to understand that there's grief that's discussed in that too.
Yeah.
And the grief of the animal and being compassionate and understanding. And there's usually a little bit of a stipend financially that's given to that's associated with this, because animals can die shortly after if they're so connected with their beloved, or they can come under some very interesting inexplicable medical issues right after the death because of the grief. So there's a section that I've created in my will and trust that I use for clients that do have animals that mean so much to them. And they go out and they ask and find who would be the proper custodian. It's usually another loved one or a dear friend that's already familiar with the dog or the cat or the bird, or the animal. And then that's directly placed into the will or the trust. So great question. Yeah. It's just like children, right? I mean, if parents die at the same time, there has to be a section in there for the minor children and who would be the new custodians of the children if anything was to happen to both parents.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Same.
Now, you mentioned about trust. A lot of times in insurance policies, they'll ask you for, under the beneficiary section, is this to check mark if this was a trust or if this is a beneficiary as a person. What exactly is a trust? And is that something someone like myself or people that are watching can get, or is that something for the rich and famous?
And some it's a benefit to be a trust fund baby, and others are like, no, trust fund baby.
Yeah.
So it's a Fascinating. The trust is good for when you are alive. You can, if it's revocable, you can go ahead and make changes while you're alive. I've seen some very wealthy families actually have someone where it's the testator, the one that's supposed to benefit, has no access because of business liability. But I've also seen where the testator is actively the one that is running the trust until his or her death. So you're able to place all of your assets in this trust, meaning it's not in your personal name anymore. So Dana Morgan purchased a car, the actual title will not be in Dana Morgan. It will be in the name of the trust. So the trust then at the time of death will then become irrevocable, meaning no other edits can be made because the testator has passed on. At that point, it becomes the same form as a will. So the will is good after you pass. The trust is good while you're alive and when you pass. Yeah. And so the trustee and the executor will then distribute the trust property, the estate property at that time based on your wishes as you've laid it out. Placing all of your real estate, you can do that, place it in a trust. That way you have only one tax return. The trust is given its own social security number, if you will, the EIN. Mm-hmm. With the IRS, and that will be taxed federally. It's also taxed at the state level. So your trust will be paying the taxes. And then your trust can actually pay for, obviously, your lifestyle, but there's also the allowance that you will receive out of the trust. You'll be taxed on that. So like I encouraged last month, it's very important to work with someone that knows this very well. I don't handle that. When someone presents and they want a financial power of attorney, medical power of attorney, a will or a trust, I ask them to get me in contact with their accountant or CPA, or they are the conduit between the two. I ask them questions and they ask their financial advisor and they come back to me with the answers. So that really helps us to form the trust also and what would be less taxes. One thing is that it's really fascinating now that we have an inheritance. To minimize the inheritance tax at the time of death, you can now start gifting your loved ones while you're alive $17,000 a year. And so this is, you get to also, I think on a metaphysical level, you get to see them enjoy it and be enriched by these amounts while you're alive to go for their needs or sometimes wants, but it's really helpful to avoid the maximum amount of inheritance tax that our loved ones would have to pay at the time of our death. So that's something to consider too. Definitely speak with your accountant or financial advisor about that, starting to set up your accounts to where you can start gifting your loved ones annually.
As you mentioned about the inheritance tax, is the inheritance tax on top of the other taxations that you get on income? They usually get federally and possibly statewide when someone passes on. And is that just on monetary or is that also asset?
It should be all of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it should be all of it. So it just differs. I mean, it would be different, obviously, state to state, but they tax us on everything. At every point of any money transaction. Yeah. So here we go. So just think of it like that. There's really
avoided.
There are some tricks in the real estate aspect. So of course, work with your accountant on that. There's also some situations where if the trust is made or amended or even a will by the testator and before he or she dies, there's an additional tax. So you might want to wait until they pass, but if it's needed for their care, it's needed for their care.
Okay. Coming from Rochelle, she's asking, what are your thoughts on time of death deeds and what different items are covered?
Oh, this is a really great question. And they're holographic or at the time of death deeds, they can be challenged. Sometimes they're not even in writing. They're usually made from a deathbed. So it's very difficult they'll stand if they're not challenged. If they're challenged, there's going to be some issues. You can cover anything and everything But like we see on some of these wonderfully portrayed media programs where there's the evil stepmother, right? That's getting the father to change the will and write all the kids out at the last minute. This is, these are the issues that we're faced with. I would suggest now that everyone has a video on their phone is to actually video it so you get the likeness of your loved one actually setting out the wishes. This is very helpful. And also to have maybe a doctor there that can attest to his or her lucidness at the time that this is being recorded. And I would also obviously have it make sure you verbalize today is this date and this time we're located here in this county at this hospital in this state so that you're setting the jurisdiction at that point. And so it would be heard and decided on if it is challenged. And disputed in that specific courthouse there in that county. Great question.
And of course, like how you were saying the recording, because that was going to be a question for myself. It's okay, because they're verbalizing it. You need to make sure if they're not filming it, if they're writing it down, that you have witnesses to sign off to say, hey, I witnessed this being said, the doctor or nurse is also saying, hey, I witnessed this. Is that another way of confirming, hey, we have witnesses to confirm outside of me sent him or her saying, these are my wishes?
Yeah, great question. You have to be over the age of 18, and you cannot be a beneficiary, and you cannot be the one that created the documents. So you have to have impartial, uninterested individuals that can sign as a witness. However, some states do not honor that unless it's notarized. So if you have time, call in a mobile notary to the hospital room and have that mobile notary actually notarize what has been written and has been witnessed. And so you have that as well as the video with the doctor on there and setting the jurisdiction.
Okay. That is good information to kind of know to make sure, like you said, it is not being contested, because a lot of times when it's these families that the loved one won the lottery and or something like that, and they're all clamoring for this money and stuff. And you want to make sure that the money is going to the people that you really wanted to go to, instead of everyone saying, I'm supposed to have a piece of that pie on that. So that's really good to kind of know and base upon. Now, you were mentioning a little earlier about when people have to amend their wills or their power of attorney. When you amend it, is this something you need to go back to an attorney to amend, or is this something you can do yourself to update it? I changed my job. Now my insurance policies are different. I need to update that. So I'm just going to update it myself and have some witnesses to sign off confirming that this change has happened. Or is this something that, yes, you need to go to an attorney, or you need to get a notary to notarize it?
We the people, right? So we should be able to represent ourselves, and they make legal like it's another language. And they really do try to get us to hire legal professionals, which are very valuable, but at the same time can be extremely expensive. Let's pay $1,500 to $7,500 for a trust, right? Depending on how many assets, how complicated it is. It's usually a percentage, unless you find someone that does on a flat fee. You shouldn't have to go back to make a couple quick changes for another $1,500. And you can do it yourself and ask an attorney to review it. You can do your own legal research, maybe phone a friend, and maybe a consultation to find the right attorney if that's what you want to do. Some paralegals are authorized legally in certain states to review and prepare. And yes, always have it witnessed and always notarized. That way it can't be disputed that this original is not superseded by the amendment. And that's usually going to be contested if you're changing beneficiaries or adding property and adding new beneficiaries, right? Because it's that delusion. Oh, see, we were fine. No, you don't get anything. Now I get one third instead of one half, and that's not fair. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to contest it. And a lot of these things get really tumultuous because they would rather see that one third go to attorneys and the court instead of this person. Of course, yeah, they're paid for it. So it can get really ugly. Always, you could do it yourselves. I would just suggest having someone review it and it notarized.
Got you. Okay.
And of course, provide the updated to your primary and secondary or co-agents. They should always have the most updated documents in case something
happens. Got you. Okay. Now, kind of going into, I call it the legal terminology to help those that are watch understand. Can you explain what the right to inheritance means and what does that cover?
It's just proving up that you are who you are and that it's your right to inherit. This, of course, has to be done before the probate court in the jurisdiction of the testator. So it can't be like, I'm in California and Dana is in Georgia and I bring an action in California to make sure that your trust or will that was made in Georgia is distributed to me in California, any part, whatever, it's the collector's spoon, let's just use that. I would have to file letters over in Georgia and actually have to be there to try to get that collector's spoon, even though you left it to my sister. That's the thing, right of inheritance. You have to prove maybe something, jurisdiction, anything in writing, a video. It's really hard if you can say my sister told me, we're all sisters. So my sister told me that I can have this if anything ever happened to her. Oh yeah, when? Where were you standing? How did she say it? Because she told me the same thing. So it becomes a she said, proving the right. But you know, usually this is someone that didn't know that so-and-so was their mother, proving that they are actually a bona fide child of this individual. And that would again be in probate court. So very contentious.
Okay. Now, as people are doing their estate planning, what makes up a well-designed estate plan?
Oh my gosh. So it usually includes, if you were to go to an attorney and you don't have anything at all, and you would choose a trust or a will. And sometimes they have a living trust that also includes complicated aspects. This is someone that has a lot of different accounts. So there's either the will or the trust, power of attorney, medical, and power of attorney, financial. And that's really what they provide for you. And it's in a beautiful packet. Sometimes they bind it all. I don't suggest that because your physician doesn't need your full trust, nor does your bank need your medical wishes. So one that can be retractable and you can take out what binders work great. The only problem is someone can say that's not the most recent codicil will. There's keep it under lock and key and make sure all of your agents have it. So that's really the package of all that you would need. Of course, there's many other things. If you're an entrepreneur, you own patents, trademarks, copyrights, you have your own business and it's doing well. Like you wouldn't want to put that in your trust or your will. That would be a separate succession plan. That's separate. It has its own social security number. So these are, even though you are the company and you know it and everyone knows it, in the eyes of corporate America, it's its own standing person. So it will be treated as its own standing person. Yeah.
Gotcha. And another question I'm seeing coming through is, if I have a living trust, do I still need a will?
No, you don't need a will.
Mm.
But, you know, if you wanted to have an extra oomph in there, you could. I just wouldn't. It automatically converts into a will. So it's called a living trust pour over. So it pours over into a will. And since the testator has passed on, there are no further edits that will be made. So it stands as is at the time of death.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Another question I'm seeing that's coming through is, can you explain what is a revocable living trust?
Sure. Was that the end of the question, Dana? I think you kind
yes,
of...
Yes, it was. That was what
I said. Oh, sorry. Yeah. That's a little bit too late. Okay. So a living trust will provide for you while you're alive, and it will turn into a will when you die. Revocable means that you can change it at any time. So you can amend it at any time. Irrevocable happens when you die and no more edits can be made. Now, when you're alive and you go into and you enter into and execute in an irrevocable trust, it means that's it. It can never be amended. It would actually have to be superseded by another entirely different trust.
Okay. Okay. Another question that's come through is someone is asking, what is a testamentary trust? Okay.
Yeah. So it's just a trust. There's really no difference. In fact, let me give you the exact definition of it. Yeah, there's just a fiduciary relationship between the trustee and the executor. It's the same. That's exactly what you're talking about, is a regular trust, is a testamentary.
Okay.
You're the testator and you're making testaments here through the trust.
Gotcha. Okay. And someone is asking, is there a difference between a regular trust and me creating a charitable remainder trust?
There's a difference. Yeah. Irrevocable, I think, is what you said, Dana. Is that right?
They were saying if there's a difference between a regular trust and a charitable remainder trust.
Yeah. So regular trust, the charitable remainder trust would be on top of. So it's like the supplemental, like we were talking about the funeral insurance and the long-term care insurance. This is the same type of thing. You could put a provision in your testamentary trust where you have now another trust that it references for charitable contributions. Mm-hmm. Or you can just put it in your trust. So it depends on how much you're leaving and what you're leaving. And if there's a de-escalation type of escalation where on this date or if they fulfill this, then they get this. So it's kind of like when you have a will or a trust and you say that the will, when the trust becomes a will and you say, if my grandson graduates from high school at 18, he will get this much towards college. When he graduates from college, he gets this much towards his life. And at this point, when he reaches his goals here, which is then at the discretion of the person that's distributing it, then he gets this much when he gets married, that sort of thing. So there's like escalation in distribution, and that can actually be in that charitable trust as well.
Okay. So that's kind of like when we see the scenarios of in the news or a lot of times in movies that my loved one end up leaving all of their money to this ex charity, that will be through that charitable remainder trust, basically.
Yeah, because it's not getting sticky. I mean, you could put it within your trust, and I would have a provision in there just to reference that there is something that exists out there. And I would have it with your package, with all of your other estate planning paperwork. But it's really about donating outside of your current beneficiaries. But the charitable trust, any type of charities that you're leaving there, leaving estate property to their beneficiary too. Right. So it's just a different type of beneficiary. It's not an individual.
Okay. Someone was asking that when making a trust, do I have to go with an attorney or couldn't I go with a financial advisor, like through Fidelity or Edward Jones, any of those particular companies, could they be able to provide that service?
Yes, they could. And they actually have quite a bit of partnerships with law firms, or they have lawyers, attorneys on staff that create these documents and update them regularly. And so it's like a benefit that they offer. I know that my credit union offers this as well. They have certain workshops, seminars, and also paperwork for you to complete, and it's updated. So yes, absolutely. You can go to these different partners of wherever you may be banking, financial accounts. And yeah, they're pretty good.
Okay.
I wouldn't necessarily use like Rocket Lawyer, even though they are updated and state specific. I would go with who you trust instead of just an online account type of company.
Gotcha. Okay.
You have some good questions tonight, Dana.
What? Yeah. I'm referring to the questions that's submitted. This is one I'm thinking of do you have a recommended checklist that people can use to help them prepare their estate planning to make sure they're not forgetting something to put into that will or trust to make sure things are covered? Do you have a recommended checklist or document to refer to make sure all your assets are considered, everything is outlined in your will and trust?
Yeah, I have a general checklist. It's quite lengthy and it's a real big deterrent for others to really want to start on this journey.
Okay.
Your trust is only going to be as protected as the information that you provide. So it really is really important to go through everything. So I'm going to start listing off some things. All of your beneficiaries, their current address at the time the trust is made, the last four of their social, their date of birth, their phone number, and email address for every beneficiary. On top of that, I need to know what relationship they have to you. Are they a dear family friend? Are they a stepson, a daughter by birth, an ex-husband? I've had a woman leave her ex-husband something, so he was listed there too. You could, in fact, have gotten remarried, and I will need the divorce decree, or at least the information of when you were divorced from your last spouse. And of course, when you remarried and where and the date of your new spouse. This could get quite lengthy if someone has married several times. And also, when I identify a beneficiary, it could be a child from the first husband or a child from the third husband or a stepchild from the fifth husband. So this identifying where they are in your life and who they were to you is very important, because I put a provision in there. If you're not listed here as a beneficiary, it's as if I didn't know you during my lifetime. This helps to avoid anyone else saying they are entitled to anything that you have to be distributed. For every financial account, including bank accounts, savings, brokerage accounts, I will need the name of the company. I will need your account number, the representative that you deal with or the one that is assigned to your account, and their contact information. This is very important for the trustee and the executor for a trust, and for the will is the person that's administrating, for them to be able to not have to dig through statements to find who to contact and how to contact. They have everything in front of them. The value of your real estate at the time that you're making the trust or the will, the APN number, the assessor's parcel number. So that gives us the map in which you own, and that's listed with the county, and your mortgagee, right? Who's the financier of the mortgage? How many notes do you have? Do you have a second, third? It's not always with the same company. I'll need those details and those account numbers.
Yes.
And then, of course, you think that's with one property. What about other properties? Previous estate planning documents, what's out there? Who has what? What have you created in the past? What do I need to terminate? Or would this be an amendment and not a brand new trust, right? Is it revocable? Yeah. Any divorce, but prenuptial and postnuptial agreements that you have? You can see marriage is a big topic when it comes to estate planning, right? Different types of distribution per state, based on where you live, and not necessarily where you were married, where you are a resident. This is where taxes prove where you really live. You live somewhere and you've got the rich people that are here for 6 months in California and then 6 months in Florida so they can lessen their taxable income. They would Florida at the time of distribution, which is a lot more expedient than California because the lack of amount of populace and their laws tend to be a little more streamlined. Copies of retirement plans and retirement account statements. We talk business agreements. Oh my goodness. Who is going to come back and say, you know what? I deserve some of his estate property because we were in business together. So making sure that those business agreements are tidy before you start to draft your trust. Copies of your insurance and the value and what benefits those are, the cover. List of liabilities. This includes, we all think the home is an asset. It actually is a liability if you're upside down or have taken out too many lines of credit. So I would need a full list of all of your current liabilities, including mortgages, credit lines, and any other forms of debt, who you're indebted to, account numbers, and contacts. And yeah, that's pretty much all of that, what goes into it. And of course, your fiduciary agents, those that will be held by the court of law to distribute your estate property properly for you, right? Not taking more than they need, not hooking their friends up, hiring them as the third parties to accounts. So I'll need their full names, addresses. And I also like to do an affidavit, which is an attestation of these agents saying that they understand that they're bound by law and that they will do everything reasonable to act on your behalf in distributing your property of your estate.
Yes. Okay.
Can be quite a lot because you think also of vehicles and anything else that you own. What's gathering? Hell, it's your life.
Basically. Very true. But at the same time, you have to make sure you outline it, because if we don't, like we were just talking about, we have the issues of someone saying, hey, they promised this to me, and you have no documentation to confirm or deny that they really said that, and you're going to probate to prove it and things like that. So it's one of those that is better. It's on that side of, it's better to have too much information outlined than not enough, that it leaves too much up in the air of, was this really their wishes, or this person just trying to get all of the real estate that's tied to that business?
I've had someone, that's a perfect example. I've actually had someone lay out all of their plants. They named them. I asked them to identify. They just gave me the name of their plants, and they gave a plant to specific beneficiaries. And I don't know if those plants are still alive, because this is a while ago. But these are the things, though: jewelry, vehicles, artwork, the tangible things that are within the loved one's house, our house, where someone can come in and take it. And it doesn't matter if the court says, okay, yes, that ring, because it means so much to you, is yours, but it's already gone.
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. It's heartbreaking, this sort of thing.
Exactly. And it's definitely one of those that, like you said, you want to kind of cover that, because we don't want that heartbreak of, this is something that you and this loved one has talked about for years since you were a child that you will get. And because it wasn't in the will, someone else ends up taking it, and you have no access to it, or vice versa, that someone's claiming they have it and you have, who are you? That aspect.
But happened to me when I was young. I was supposed to get a specific item, and when my one parent died, the other parent decided to liquidate everything and gave that away. Literally didn't even charge for it. And it's still something that aches once in a while when I think about it. But I think as young people, and then it's your mom doing something, it's not where to go, right? You don't even know who to talk to, who could help, and that would be the probate court.
Okay. And then, of course, like you said, probate court can get ugly, or it can be lengthy depending on how the fight goes. So it's one of those that you're by taking the time now to put it in your will, minimize the amount of time that you have to fight for these things that you wanted before it's gone. and everything.
Yeah. Even though it may be heart-wrenching, if you're Gen X, a baby boomer, any of you, please do it, because we constantly see on social media people posting about a GoFundMe because they need to take care of their loved ones, burials, arrangements, and everything. We also see the fight on social media and on these shows of over assets for what they think. My mom wanted me to say, and this sister or brother saying, no, she wanted this. And it becomes this very ugly fight that a lot of times will cause detriment to relationships. So knock it out now. Knock it out now.
You can see, though, it's a little overwhelming. It's daunting initially because there's so much that one needs to gather. But
yes.
People don't have this much. They have one account that they've really poured everything into. Or it is tangible things, things that they made with their own hands that are in value, that you've kept and you've cherished. I have a dear friend that has these things, and they're more valuable than any money that could have been left. Yeah, there's two things. So they say estate planning is the most everlasting gift that you can leave your loved one. Estate planning is a way of saying, I love you, to those you leave behind.
Yeah.
And death is not the end. There remains the litigation over your estate. horrible. Terrible jokes that are true. And serrated knife. Yeah.
It very much.
Of course, we're at the end of the show. So, of course, Kumu, Michelle, we like to thank you once again for diving into that. For those that are tuning in, definitely make sure you tune in on the third Wednesday of every month. We will have our episode with Kumu Michelle Manu about different legal topics. I know next month we are supposed to dive into, because we're interchanging it. I'm trying to find what we're going to be talking about, because Moana wanted legal service agreements. So next month, we're going to be talking about legal service agreements. So whether it's an agreement from a new app or a service agreement with Best Buy for your policy for your coverage or your appliances, there's so much legal jargon in these service agreements that probably 90% of people just scroll to the bottom until they get to I accept and just keep it moving. But a lot of times we don't know what we accept, which we're finding out. Agreement for the new McDonald's app, they have updated that if you agree to using the app, that you cannot sue for anything regarding the app or loss to you for anything. And a lot of people, that became a big thing on the news that most people did not catch with the new update they did to the app. So we're going to dive into that legal jargon, the stuff to need to know, the things that you also make sure if you have questions about legal service agreements, to also send it to our address at MoanaNui Podcast, is one word, @gmail.com. That way we can ask them to Kumu Michelle Manu during our episode. But also you can also put them in the comment section like you're doing tonight through YouTube, Facebook, X, formerly known as Twitter, Instagram, or any of our platforms. You can submit them right in the comment section. We will see them, as I have been doing tonight. And I will ask those questions as we're having this conversation. But everyone, we thank you for tuning in for tonight. If there are topics that we are outlining some topics for this year, but if there's a topic that is very close to heart that we have not considered, that you want us to have that conversation with Kumu Manu, please let us know, so that way we can make sure we dedicate an episode to dive into that legal conversation regarding that topic. Any last words you have for the audience?
No, I just think we just probably should start cleaning up our lives. We're so busy and there's just certain personal affairs that, because we're filled with all of this noise constantly, these faux deadlines and work deadlines, those are real. But we have to ask ourselves, will anyone lose their life if I don't get to this?
Yes.
And usually the answer is no. Well, so let's refocus and prioritize so we can leave our loved ones better than we've been left, right?
Yes.
Thanks.
Very great point.
Thank you for coming on once again. Everyone, thank you for watching. And for those that are watching this on the replay, if you want to catch up on any of our past episodes, whether with Kumo Michelle Manu or with our talent development segments or even our sports segments or any of our other segments we have, make sure you like and follow the Moana Nui podcast on YouTube or Twitch or Facebook or X, because those would be the prime ones. But our recordings for our past episodes, you can always find them on our YouTube page. You'll see playlists dedicated for each segment. We thank you for tuning in. We hope you have a great evening.
Say the word.